podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Weekly podcast, going daily for the T20 World Cup. Two washouts today, with Ireland, Afghanistan, England and Australia sharing 4 points between them, but it will take more than a lack of any cricket being played to stop us talking about cricket. We'll discuss how the no results have affected the chances of those four teams, especially in Australia, I suppose. We'll look a bit more at what England need to change, how they're sort of shaping up ahead of a massive week, and talk about a nice chat that one of our panellists had with Harry Brook. With me today are Wisden Cricket Monthly magazine editor Joe Harmon and Cam Ponsonby, who joins us from Australia in his snorkel and goggles. Cam, a winter in Australia, sunning yourself, watching some cricket. Has it been everything you dreamed it would be so far?
Absolutely. I genuinely don't know how much cricket I've really seen now. I had a nice time in Geelong. I went off to Junction Oval and watched some Sheffield Shield. But the MCG's been... It's always, on a personal level, it's so exciting to be here and cover some matches here. And it's just rained. So, it's not quite off the bucket list yet. But we tried our best.
Mm. Right then, England 0, Australia 0. Another T20 World Cup thriller with the rain just beating the MCG ground staff. Joe, which of the two sides do you think there's no result benefits?
I would say on balance, probably England. I think if you look at the games that England had remaining before today... you'd say this was probably their hardest, just about. The Kiwis might disagree with that, but I'd say in Australia's home conditions, I would say this is the hardest. So to get a draw out of this one, or an abandoned point, knowing essentially, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if they beat New Zealand and Sri Lanka, they're more or less certainly through, net run rate permitting.
Yeah,
so it's not ultimately any free, is it?
It is really hard to work out. I kind of think Australia are still better placed because their last two games are easier than England's last two games. But if England win those two, which, you know, they're well capable of beating New Zealand and Sri Lanka, then they'll be at least tied on points with Australia, and then it'll be down to net run rate. And their net run rate is currently better than Australia's. So both sides kind of, they're sort of dependent on other results. It's sort of in their own hands. Australia sort of better placed, being, and maybe the gap is slightly narrower, but yeah,
there are too many ifs and buts for me to kind of get my head around it, really. I'm just looking forward to watching some more cricket. It's just, aside from all the kind of ramifications of today, it's just a crying shame, not just for poor Cam, who was hoping to get his first games at the MCG, but it's just, well, I think there were 60,000 fans scheduled to be in there today, so much riding on a game that was being sort of touted almost as a kind of quarter final, so it's just a massive shame it hasn't happened. And this has been sort of the trend of the tournament so far. It's either been absolute thriller or washout in the most literal sense, and not a huge amount in between, really. And England have a little wait before they play New Zealand in the next game on
Tuesday,
and then Sri Lanka the following Saturday. So it was after that defeat, even though I think this isn't a particularly bad result for England, after the defeat to Ireland, they needed to get kind of a bit of momentum going. So it is disappointing they haven't been able to do that, and the kind of the question marks around what they do with their side will continue for another few days until they play again.
Yeah, I kind of wonder from the momentum point of view if it's also maybe not the worst thing for England to not be playing so soon after. I was just thinking back to the 2019 World Cup when they had that loss to Sri Lanka and then the game against Australia not long afterwards, and it just felt like they went into that and you could tell from quite a long way out that they were like, their heads weren't really in it, that they lost that comfortably, and it was after that they were able to regroup. But in that tournament, you could afford a couple of losses back-to-back. Today, defeat would have been disastrous, and I could easily have seen them, you know, it's so quick on the back of it, sort of as soon as one thing goes wrong, everything goes wrong kind of thing. I guess better place to talk about the mood in the camp, they will be. Cam, you're out there. You were, in Jos Buttler's press conference after the Ireland game when he seemed quite frustrated. What's your impression of what the mood in the camp is like, do you think?
Yeah, Butler actually spoke really, I know it's almost like a cliche to say, oh, they've spoken well or whatever, but you hear so many of those cliches trodden out, oh, we're gonna move on from this, etc. But the quote he was going with was like, we need to let this hurt. Like, this was really bad. It's more disappointing because we were expected to win. This is shit, basically. That's what that's what he was getting across there. And we spoke to kind of Livingston afterwards, and I think, yeah, there's an embargo on it, but it finishes in half an hour. So we're all fine. He basically was asked, like, were you frustrated that you only got to face two balls and you guys didn't go harder earlier? And he just said, yes. And that was it. And you're kind of like, oh, okay. There's obviously just there was just a tangible frustration. It wasn't a sports and person's chat about kind of reacting to a defeat. It was two people who obviously kind of deeply cared and were like pissed off that they'd lost what should have been kind of a banker game for them. And it's put them in a really difficult position because they are, I know they're ahead on that run rate ahead of Australia, but Australia should beat Afghanistan and Ireland. So you have that pressure on every single game. You have to be perfect from here on in to get through. And yeah, and it, as this tournament's shown, upsets are happening all the time. So the fact that you have to be perfect from now is a pain and bad.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the Livingston thing, because you wrote a piece where you said that the one thing that might make England reflect on is how many balls, I guess, Moeen and Livingston are facing. Do either of you think there's much England need to change? I guess Stokes at number four looks like being the call that will define England's World Cup one way or another, doesn't it, Joe?
Yeah, this is obviously a conversation we've been having quite a long way out from the World Cup, and the dynamic has shifted because Stokes has bowled much better than certainly I expected. I think much better than a lot of people expected. So now it's not really does he deserve his place in the team, it's where do you put him? And Milan Stokes 3-4 obviously was a mistake, and I think Butler has pretty much acknowledged that since. The question is it a mistake in a full 20-over game that runs its course? Or were they just unfortunate because they didn't get to put their strategy into play because the rain came down at a kind of a bad time for them? My feeling is that it just doesn't work. I just think it's not the best use of their resources. They've got it reminds me a little bit of how India have got stuck in the past, and that they've got all these good players, but almost reputation comes above kind of ability now. And I don't know if Owen Morgan would have fallen into this trap in the same way. I think he might have been slightly more ruthless and said, this is what we need at this particular time. We're going for it, rather than Stokes bats four because it's Ben Stokes. It feels a little bit like that's what's going on with the England side at the moment. And it'll be fascinating to see what they do against New Zealand. I guess it depends what the pitch is looking like. It depends if they're chasing a target, how big that target is. But if they're thinking we need to score 200 plus, I don't think Milan three, Stokes four is the way to go about it.
Mm, yeah. Away from today's lack of action, Cam, you had a nice chat with Harry Brook earlier this week.
Yeah, it was. I spoke to Brook yesterday, and he's really got like a touch of the geniuses about him. Where I was asking him about basically playing the scoop against 90 miles an hour, and he went, "Oh yeah, well, it's just fairly self-explanatory, really. You just kind of shuffle out of the way and put your bat out like a pancake, and then it goes to six." And I was like, "Yeah, sweet. That's just answered everything for me. Thanks very much, Harry." But no, it's been quite interesting just being an outsider and trying to work out what you're seeing in terms of Mike Hussey, the batting coach out here, was doing the press. And I asked him like, oh, what's Brook's preparation like? What's his structure like? How does he go about it? And he was telling me, oh, he's incredibly structured. He has his certain throwdowns. He has his front foots, back foots. He's always got something in the nets. And I went and watched England in the net, and I swear to God, it just looked like Harry Brook was trying to hit every ball as far as he could. I was like, what? Like, this guy's just trying to whack it. And I asked Brook about that. I went, with the greatest of respect, I was told you had like a very structured routine and you just hit every ball for six. And he was like, yeah, but where did I hit the ball for six? It went straight and over square leg. And I was like, okay, right. So yeah, you were practicing something. I was just a bit taken away by the whole scenario. But it's interesting what he was talking about, how you have to vary your game depending on where you play T20. His kind of line he has about 2020 cricket is low risk, high reward, which kind of is at odds with what potentially where the game's going and potentially where people think about it, which is you can go harder than you think you can. Try and hit every ball for six. You've got 10 wickets and 20 overs, and him having a very batter's mentality of, no, I'm going to win the game. And what's the best way that I can win the game and get this sorted? So he kind of, in previous interviews, he's spoken about being frustrated that he's got caught on the boundary after having hit a six. He's like, did I need to hit that? Or could I have knocked my twos? And that's a big thing he's talking about in Australia, is the big square boundaries, using the sweep shot and making sure that you're trying to hit it between kind of deep mid wicket and deep square leg, or if there's a backward square leg. So you know that if you get it wrong, you don't get it, you're still getting a two basically. And you're trying to hit these pockets of the ground where your maximum reward is a boundary, but your minimum reward, which is still a safe option, is one or two. So yeah, it was really nice to chat to. It was funny in that the first thing he said, he just went, oh, the weather is shocking. That was it. I think that's kind of the tone of, I really can't emphasize how damp this city is. Like, we were never, ever, ever going to play cricket today. After the England-Ireland game, the players were talking about how the outfield was a rugby pitch, and then it's had two more days worth of rain on it. And you can see, I can see from here, where like the tractors come on and off the pitch, there's tractor marks. There's like, it's so damp. And so, yeah, I think there's probably a frustrated England camp, and it was, I think I caught Harry at a good time because he'd just been to the Grey Nichols factory. And so I think I probably caught him in his happy place, just with a load of cricket bats in the back of his car. So that was my chat with Harry. What a lovely guy.
Just on your chat with Brookham, he, having looked so fluent in Pakistan, he got a bit stuck against Ireland. Was it 18 off 20 in the end? It didn't, I don't know, it was hard to tell whether he was playing himself in or whether he just couldn't quite get used to the pace of the pitch. Did you get a chance to chat to him about that innings and any reflections on what he might do differently?
Yeah, I think it was as simple as he just thought he batted badly. He was talking about the need to be able to turn over the strike and keep things ticking, keep it going. And he just went, oh, I couldn't do that yesterday. That was it. Like, but he didn't say this line yesterday, but it was a line I saw from a previous interview of his where he said, I feel pressure, but I don't feel nerves, basically. And so it goes back to his initial kind of like, oh, it's obvious, just scoop it over fine leg for six. Like, I do think with these people who, and he's not there yet, but people who could be these kind of top level athletes, they are wired in a way that I'm not actually sure is better or worse than the rest of us, where I think Brooke's so content with his game and how he's been playing and confident he will obviously be playing in the next game. He's like, yeah, badly. Stuff happens. I'll make it right against New Zealand. So that was my impression of it, at least. I didn't come away from it worrying that Harry Brooke was going to be nervous himself going into the next game.
Well, that interview is for a feature on all, I think, of England's new / returning test players for the Pakistan tour in the next issue of Wisden Cricket Monthly. Joe's spoken to Ben Duckett. I've done something on Will Jacks. What was Liam Livingston covered as well?
Liam Livingston's covered. Phil's spoken to Keaton Jennings. Yeah, the theme is, and we'll no doubt talk about this on the weekly podcast in more depth, but the theme is these kind of blurred lines of red ball, white ball under McCullum, in a way that we thought these two formats were kind of diverging further and further away from each other. The squad that England have picked for Pakistan, and we don't know if it will work or not, is blurring the lines again in a way that's exciting. Going to be fascinating to watch.
Well, that issue will be out in a couple of weeks, so make sure to check that out. On to the day's other non-game, Ireland's no result against Afghanistan. Afghanistan have now had one defeat and two washouts, which is unfortunate. They're probably out of the semi-final race. Ireland, if they win their last two against New Zealand and Australia, admittedly have a chance, but it's still a blow, isn't it, Joe?
It is. For Ireland in particular, having kind of coming off the high of that England win, and historically, they've got a horrendous record in T20 against Afghanistan. They didn't win for a very long time, but they actually beat them 3-2 in a really good five-match series in Ireland this summer. And actually, given that Ireland turned over England and given the conditions in Australia, I think I might have had Ireland as narrow favourites heading into this game. Now they've got two difficult games, which, you know, they could go and win, they could still go through, but this felt their best possible route to go through to the semi-finals, dare we say it. And in particular, coming in that top four, which guarantees your spot on the next T20 World Cup, which shouldn't be underestimated, because those qualifiers are very hard to get through.
Cam, I'm not a meteorologist, but there has been a lot of rain. Until this year, I saw a stat doing the rounds that there had only been six games of cricket played in Australia sort of before the start of November in the Australia summer, I suppose. Are we seeing why, or is that too simplistic?
No, I think that's a slight... I don't think that's fair. And the reason I say that is because the Australian international summer is December and January, but the Australian cricket summer is October through to ever. So cricket is played out here. It's just it's Sheffield Shield, it's Marsh Cup or whatever. And like it's La Niña is like the word it's used, which means like an unseasonal event or whatever. It's something basically means rain. And the reason it's got a name is because it never happens. And now it's happened for 3 years in a row. And this tournament was meant to be played here before COVID. So when it was originally announced, like, yes, Melbourne gets a bit of rain, but this is like completely unheard of levels. I don't think you can blame the ICC for putting it here and thinking that it was a risk. Will it have a knock-on effect? Almost definitely, in that you'll probably, if Australia hosts another event, they might go February or March. But basically, it's like if England hosted an international, had their internationals in like the last couple of weeks of April. Like, cricket is still played at this time. Maybe that's a poor example because it might have rained a lot more in April. I don't know. But no, I don't think the ICC should be getting kind of a stick across the back for hosting this tournament here, because it's unprecedented events. I think that's the phrase that's meant to be used, apart from last year and the year before. But before then, never happened.
And also, there's quite a lot of those, not just in Australia, around the world. It's becoming increasingly difficult to find a place that is going to be either a reasonable temperature or not rain or not have storms. I mean, this, unfortunately, is the world we now live in.
Signs of climate changing across the world. I haven't heard too much about it, but I think it's meant to be quite important, basically.
It's a nice, cheery note to almost end on. But finally, we had a message from Joss in County Sligo, a long-time listener of the show from Ireland. He has a special request. He asks, can you, or one of the other wonderful guests on the show, please, please, oh my God, please, pronounce Fionn Hand's name correctly? Aussie stadium announcers, Caribbean commentators, and the whole shebang in between have been saying his name as two syllables, and I'd love to hear one person just say Fionn properly. Well, I've given it a go twice. Joss, I'm sure, will let me know if I've messed up, and we will get there in the end. Does anyone else want to have a go? Because if the more of us that try it, the more likely we are to get it right, I suppose.
Or make a mistake.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I would say for your pronunciation is I don't even know what name you've said, so that's how well I think. I don't know who you're talking about.
Fionn.
Yeah, that sounds better than mine, I reckon.
All right.
Good. But I think that's anyway quite enough for a day with no cricket.
Shank looks so confused. I think
I genuinely have no idea what player we're currently talking about, and that's okay. That's fine.
Fionn Hand, he bowled the beautiful ball to Stokes on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I know. That's fine. Fionn Hand, that's all I've got.
This is the problem, because we've got so used to the mispronunciation, yes, that when you pronounce it right, we don't know who you're talking about.
Yes.
That's the problem in a nutshell.
So a Labuschagne, Labuschagne situation. Anyway, that's quite enough for a day with no cricket. Sri Lanka take on New Zealand tomorrow, an important game for both sides. Obviously still in semi-final contention. Only 1 point separating what first and last in that group. So it is nicely set up, even if it's a shame that it's the rain that sort of got it in that situation. But anyway, come back then for discussion on that game, and I'm sure plenty of other stuff too. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.